Please open your Bible to 2 Kings chapter 4, where we're going to begin in verse number 8 in just one moment. We're looking at some of the events of the ministry of Elisha the prophet in the northern kingdom of Israel. Now, I believe that these events take place during the 850s BC, during the time that there is Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, ruling in Judah, the southern kingdom, and he's a horrible guy. And Jehoram, the son of Ahab, is ruling in northern Israel, and he is a bad guy, but he's not as bad as Jehoram of Judah. And so while those two guys are carrying out all of their activities, Elisha is doing the work of God. Now, yesterday, we looked at how Elisha provided miraculous resources for the widow of one of his ministry students, referred to as the sons of the prophets. Today, we go to the northern city of Shunem, which is just a few miles north of the ancient royal city of Jezreel. It's in the Jezreel Valley, not terribly far from Nazareth, or from Megiddo, or from the Sea of Galilee. It's like in the heart of southern Galilee. Well, this is what we are told happened in that place regarding Elisha the prophet. 1 Kings 4, verse 8. One day, Elisha went on to Shunem, where a wealthy woman lived, who urged him to eat some food. So Elisha is traveling all over the northern kingdom, and that's a large area. And he apparently travels on a road that takes him past this particular city often enough that this woman gets to know him. She feeds him at least a couple of times to start with, and then eventually develops a more permanent relationship with him. The rest of verse 8 says, so whenever he passed that way, he would turn in there to eat food. So she said to her husband, which we're going to find out later is considerably older than her, behold now, I know that this is a holy man of God who is continually passing our way. Let us make a small room on the roof with walls and put there for him a bed, a table, a chair, and a lamp, so that whenever he comes to us, he can go in there. So Elisha stops by for a meal, and apparently a bed, often enough, that this lady says, look, we need to make a prophet room. That's where this term came from, is this very passage. Let's make a dedicated room for this prophet. We'll build it up on the roof. You know, their roofs back at that time were flat roofs, and they would use them like we would use a deck or a patio. So let's build a little bedroom up on the top deck and furnish it, and then whenever he comes by here, that's where he can stay. It'll always be ready for him. And so her husband agrees, and they build this little prophet room. Well, one day he came there, and he turned into the chamber, and he rested there. And he said to Gehazi, his servant, call this Shunammite. So now this is where we find out that Elisha actually has a man functioning as his valet. It's probably one of the sons of the prophets, probably one of his ministry students that travels with him and makes sure that everything gets taken care of. So he tells Gehazi, ask the lady to come here to me. So when he had called her, she stood before him. And he said to him, That is Gehazi. Say now to her, see, you have taken all this trouble for us. What is to be done for you? Would you have a word spoken on your behalf to the king or to the commander of the army? Now, it is evident from those words that by this time, Elisha has developed some sort of relationship with Jehoram, king of northern Israel, that would allow him to basically tell the king what to do for this lady. Or apparently he also has a relationship with whoever the commander is over the northern Israeli army. And he wants to know, is there something special I can do for you to say thank you for the way that you make a place for me and Gehazi to stay every time we come by this way? She answered, I dwell among my own people, which is a roundabout way of saying, no, I don't really need anything. I've got my friends, my family, my house, my husband. I've got everything I really kind of need. I'm satisfied with my life. And he said, well, what is then to be done for her? Now, we don't totally understand why Elisha seems to be talking only through Gehazi to this lady. It may have to do with some sort of cultural thing of the time that he had to have a go-between himself and a woman that he was not related to. But however that works, he ends up having a conversation with Gehazi about what am I supposed to do? Because she really should be thanked for what she's doing to help us out. So Gehazi answered, well, she has no son. Her husband is old. So she's married to an old guy and they don't have a kid. Maybe that's what she really would need, is maybe a new husband after this one dies and a kid. Well, Elisha takes that under advisement and he said, call her. And when he had called her, she stood in the doorway. And this is apparently up on the roof in his little prophet room. And he said, at this season, about this time next year, you shall embrace a son. Now you'll notice he talks directly to her, doesn't talk through Gehazi this time. And she said, oh no, my Lord, oh man of God, don't lie to your servant. Now that's her way of saying, don't play with me here. Don't tell me something that you think I want to hear if it's not going to happen. But the woman conceived. So within a couple of months after this visit, she gets pregnant. And she ends up bearing a son about that time the following spring. So about a year after this little conversation, she has a little baby boy, just exactly as Elisha had said to her. And I have zero doubt that he made her happy, brought joy to her home, gave someone that she could pour herself into as she had probably long wanted. Verse 18 tells us that some time passes. When the child had grown, apparently he's been weaned, he's able to walk around on his own and eat on his own, and he can even talk. So we're probably talking about preschool, maybe kindergarten age. So we're talking about several years that Elisha has a relationship with this lady. When the child had grown, he went out one day to his father among the reapers. So it's summertime. It's the harvest of the grain fields. And then he said to his father, oh, my head, my head. Something happens. Now, a lot of the commentators suggest that maybe he had a sudden case of heat stroke. He got out there, didn't have a hat on, wasn't drinking enough water, got overheated, and this sudden pounding headache comes on him as one of the symptoms of heat stroke. And it can be deadly. It can boil your brain, basically. But it could be some other explanation. He could have had some sort of brain tumor or growth that was causing this headache. And so he complains of this headache, this sudden headache, and the father said to his servant, carry him to his mother. So take him back home to the house so that mom can take care of him. You know, he can't have a sick kid out in the field where work's going on. The kid needs to be somewhere resting and being cared for. Verse 20. When he had lifted him and brought him to his mother, the child sat on her lap till noon, and then he died. Now, there's a lot more to the story than that. You know that. You can picture it in your head, can't you? There's mom saying, what's wrong? What's wrong? The kid saying, my head hurts. My head hurts. And crying and writhing around in her arms, and she's rocking him back and forth. And then finally, he just dies right there in her arms. Just like that. A lot of you parents out there, you grandparents, you know what that would feel like to have that happen. Maybe some of you, that has been the reality in your life, and you know how your heart is just ripped out of you at that point. What does she do? Verse 21, she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door behind him and went out. So she took his little body up the stairs. There would have been an outside set of stairs. She takes the body up the stairs into Elisha's room and lays his little body, no doubt tenderly, lovingly, on the bed. And then what does she do next? Verse 22. Then she called to her husband and said, send me one of the servants and one of the donkeys that I may go quickly to the man of God and come back again. So, she doesn't tell her husband what happened. She just simply says, hey, send one of your guys with a donkey because I want to go see Elisha. Now, this confuses the husband. He said, why will you go to him today? It's neither new moon nor Sabbath. So she apparently was in the habit of very often, when the first day of the month happened, which was a day off, it was always a holiday, she would go and spend time worshiping with Elisha, often on the first day of the month. Sabbath day, that's the rest day every week, and it's a worship day, and so apparently she spent a lot of her Sabbaths doing worship with Elisha the prophet, which at this time, Elisha seems to have some sort of worship site that he utilizes over on Mount Carmel. Now, it's probably not the same worship site that Elijah had used, because that is at least 20-some miles away from Shunem. And the site that she goes to, she has to be able to get to and back again easily in just a few hours. And so I would suggest that Probably this worship site of Elisha is somewhere southeast of Megiddo. Megiddo is actually on part of the ridge line of Carmel, and all the way down to I'm trying to think of the other town. All of a sudden, it just went right out of my head. Just a few miles south of Jezreel. There's another town that's on the ridge line of Mount Carmel. And so probably somewhere in that area, just a couple of hours donkey ride from Shunem is where this worship site is that she knows Elisha is at right now. So he asked the question, why are you going there today? It's not a worship day. And she said, well, all is well. Literally, she says, it's peaceful. It's peace. Don't worry about it. Verse 24, so they saddled the donkey. She said to her servant, urge the animal on. Do not slacken the pace for me unless I tell you. So once the donkey saddles, she gets on it and says, You get this donkey to where I'm wanting to go as fast as you can go. You don't worry about me bouncing around and oofing and griping, and or not griping, but groaning because of some of the pain of bouncing around. You just get this donkey there quick. So she set out and she came to the man of God at Mount Carmel. So a couple of hours donkey ride is what happens. Now, when the man of God saw her coming, she said to Gehazi, his servant, "Look, there's the Shunammite." So he knows her well enough. He can recognize her at a distance as she's riding this fast donkey his direction. Verse 26, "Run at once to meet her and say to her, 'Is all well with you? Is all well with your husband? Is all well with the child?'" So he wants to know, why are you coming today? Why are you in such a hurry? And he wants to know quickly. Well, she answered to Gehazi, "All is well, peace, peace," because she doesn't want to talk to Gehazi. She wants to talk to Elisha. Verse 27, "When she came to the mountain, to the man of God, she caught hold of his feet, and Gehazi came to push her away," because you see, that's totally inappropriate. Just in normal Israeli society, for a woman to grab hold of the body of a man that she was not related to, without his permission in particular, that was a breach of protocol. It was a breach of societal norms. But when that man happens to be the prophet of God, the top name amongst the prophets of God in northern Israel, that's definitely a no-no societally. And so Gehazi tries to intercept her and push her away and say, "Don't do that. You can't touch him." But the man of God said, Elisha said, "Leave her alone, for she is in bitter distress, and he who is has hidden it from me and has not told it to me." So he is confused. Why is it that God has not clued him in about something big going on? And he's bothered on the inside. And then she brings him up to speed. Then she said, "Did I ask my Lord for a son? Did I not say, 'Do not deceive me?'" And so she's in that grief-stricken stage of anger. She is mad. And she goes back to several years earlier when Elisha had said that she was going to get pregnant, and her response was, "Don't tease me. Don't tell me things like that. Don't play with me." Well, now the boy's dead, and she's mad that it would have been better. Listen to this. In her mind, right now, in her emotional state, she believes it would have been better for her to die childless than for her to have to go through the grief of losing this baby, losing this boy at this time in life. Now, Elisha is also upset about that. He said to Gehazi, "Tie up your garment, take my staff in your hand, and go. If you meet anyone, don't greet him. If anyone greets you, don't you dare reply. And you lay my staff on the face of the child." So he orders Gehazi, who is his assistant, probably a son of the prophets, probably one of the ministerial students, "I need you to run as fast as you can from here to Shunem. And you get into that upper room, my room, the prophet room, where the child's corpse is laying. And I want you to lay my special staff on his face," because he's hoping that maybe the power of God through that staff can bring this child back to life before too terribly long. Because it's already been probably a couple of hours since the baby died, since the boy died. So that's his goal, is send one of his ministry students who's a fast runner to get there quick. And then, verse 30, the mother of the child said, "As he who is lives and as you yourself lives, I will not leave you." So he arose and followed her. So she refuses to head back on her own. She sticks with Elisha. She doesn't run off with Gehazi because he's going on as fast as he can. She sticks with Elisha, who now heads back. Verse 31, Gehazi went on ahead. He laid the staff on the face of the child, but there was no sound or sign of life. And therefore, he returned to meet him and told him, the child is not awakened. So, partway there, Gehazi meets Elisha and the lady and reports nothing. There was no reaction. I laid the staff, your power sign of God upon the child's face and nothing happened. He's still dead. When Elisha came into the house, he saw the child laying dead on his bed. He went in, he shut the door behind the two of them and prayed to He who is. So he only lets the mom in. Now this reminds me an awful lot of Jairus's daughter in the New Testament story of Jesus, the little 12-year-old girl, where Jesus takes mom and dad and just a handful of his disciples in with him to resurrect that little girl. Well, here it's just Elisha and the mom and the young boy's corpse. Verse 34, then he went up, he lay on the child, putting his mouth on his mouth, his eyes on his eyes, and his hands on his hands. Now, some people have got this strange suggestion here that he was practicing a form of resuscitation. That is not what's going on. There is symbolism involved in this. He's mirroring himself with the child's body as he prays. He's got his mouth up against his mouth, his forehead against his forehead. It's not that he's kissing him. It's just that he is getting up close and personal, putting his hands on his hands, and he's praying for him. And as he stretched himself upon him, the flesh of the child became warm. So he prays until he starts feeling the life come back into this child. Verse 35, then he got up again and he walked once back and forth in the house, that is in this little room, and went up and stretched himself up upon him again. And then the child sneezed 7 times and the child opened his eyes. Now, is there significance in the 7 times? I don't know. 7 is a number of completion, so possibly. But it definitely shows that he was alive. And opening his eyes shows that he's back where he belongs. He's back in the land of the living. And mom is ecstatic, no doubt. He summoned Gehazi and said, call this Shunammite. Because apparently mom has now gone out of the house. And so he called her. And when she came to him, he said, pick up your son. She came, fell at his feet, bowing to the ground, and then she picked up her son and went out. And so that's the resurrection of the little boy that took place during the ministry of Elisha the prophet. I'd love to know who this young man was and what happened to him later in life, but we have no clear stories about that. 2 Kings 4:38, we move to another story of Elisha. This time, we move south to a place called Gilgal. Now, this is not, I don't believe, the Gilgal down in the Jordan Valley next to Jericho, but rather the Gilgal, which is in the hill country between Benjamin and Ephraim. Not very far from where the tabernacle was for a good long time. It's in northern Israel, but it's in the very southern part of northern Israel. So Elisha came again to Gilgal when there was a famine in the land. And famines come often because of the judgment of God. And so he is reinforcing the need of the people of Israel to repent during this time. But he's with some of his ministry students in this area. He's the head over all of the sons of the prophets around the entire country of Israel. And there's lots and lots of different communities of them. So this particular community, it says that as the sons of the prophets were sitting before him, he said to his servant, set on the large pot, boil stew for the sons of the prophets. So make a meal for all of the students. One of them went out into the field to gather herbs, and he found a wild vine, and he gathered from it in his lap full of wild gourds, and he came and he cut them up into this pot of stew, not knowing what they were. So you've got one of the students who might be a city person. He doesn't know wild plants. And so he goes out and grabs some gourds, thinking that they would be a good addition to this pot of stew during a famine time. And he comes back and he's trying to be very helpful. He cuts it right up into the big pot. And somebody apparently figures out what he did. It says they poured out some of the for the men to eat, but while they were eating the stew, they cried out, "Oh, man of God, there's death in the pot," and they could not eat it. So somebody recognizes these pieces of the gourd that are in the pot of stew when they start serving it and go, "Don't anybody eat this. Somebody put a poisonous gourd in the stew. It's all ruined. We can't eat it." Now, that's a great tragedy in a time of famine. If you can imagine trying to feed a great big bunch of Bible college students, and then you discover that somebody accidentally put some poison in it, that'd be a horrible waste of resources. Well, Elisha said to them, "Bring some flour." And they threw it into the pot and said, "Pour some out for the men that they may eat." And there was no harm in the pot. So he miraculously detoxifies these poisonous gourd pieces. It's not the flour that does it. That's a symbolic gesture. It's his power as the prophet of God that makes this stew edible. And so resources were not wasted, and these men continued their ministry.